Why, hello there, and welcome back to Wrong Opinions Only with your hosts, Justin and Kayla. And this week, Kayla, we're going to look back on the year 2023. We watched so much TV, we watched so many movies, and we talked about a good chunk of them. But now it is time to rank them, Kayla. Top fives. This is what I live for. You don't look as excited.
I'm very aware that this is what you live for, putting a ranking on each, in which I've complied with, but it is difficult. And, you know, you say we talked about a good chunk. I always feel like we talk about all of it, but then you start reviewing what came out this year, both in film and television, and you're like, wow, there's still somehow things that I missed. Some things you were like, yeah, I'm definitely not returning to it. And I got to say, there are a couple of things I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that show or movie. I got to put that back in the queue. So I always love doing our year-end review as we look back on the year, even though December, there's still some things coming out that we'll talk about. But I mean, we accomplished a lot. You know, we've talked about a lot. We've researched a lot. We've watched a lot. So, you know, this is like our finals, if you will.
It really is. We've made it to the championship. We're down the home stretch here. We're in the red zone. Whatever metaphor you want to use, whatever cliche, we are here now, Kayla, and everybody is relying on our lists. Because what are they going to watch if we don't tell them what to watch, Kayla? Who knows? They're just going to stand aimlessly in their front yards looking up at the clouds. They don't know. We need to give them direction.
I couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly what the people want, and we're going to give it to them. But first, as we look at the year, we reflect back on what we've covered, what we've watched, especially knowing that next year, 2024, might be a little rough in terms of what is coming out in the year due to all the strikes going on. What did you think about this year in terms of quality television, quality films? Did you feel like 2023 was a good year?
I think it was a great year, the first half of the year, before everything kind of shit hit the fan and the strikes happened. I think we were at peak prestige TV. We had a ton of great shows out, a lot of streamers. Then we had the strike. There were issues. Now these companies are consolidating. They're cutting a lot of shows. They're cutting a lot of movies. We've gotten a little bit more away from just all superhero Marvel movies, which I like, because that was getting kind of pretty dense with that being the only things that were in theaters for a while. So I personally think it was a great year. I'm just very nervous about next year, like you said, Kayla, because all the production shooting pretty much halted in, what was that, August or September for a few months, and it takes a while to get that stuff back up and running.
It gets really scary to me when things that used to have premiere dates suddenly have disappeared, and it's just like at some point in the future this will come across. You're having a lot of things kind of canceled early. You're having things canceled even when it's completed filming and they're not putting it out. I'm looking at you, Max. And so yeah, it's a little, you know, I got people already coming to me, Kayla, what do I watch? And I'm like, listen, it's reality TV's world right now, and while there certainly are good things coming out, House of the Dragon definitely being in the top, It's going to be hard of things to cover. Now, we'll never lack for things because we can always, always go back to the plethora of film and television that we haven't caught up on or want to give each other. But yeah, it's I think this year's been really good in terms of, oh my God, like I got to think about, you know, this movie, you know, for a couple days after, a couple weeks after. I felt like I watched a lot of those TV shows. A lot of new TV shows really, really surprised me this year, where I was just going into it like, I don't know about this show, and I was completely surprised. So I would say a standout for me was definitely a lot of television this year. There was a lot of good TV shows. And I think you and I both watched a lot of different ones. So we gave each other some different ideas. True. And talked about different ones. So I think that was, it was a good year for us, gotta say.
Yeah, I think we both kind of expanded our horizons a little bit in the types of shows or movies we'll go see. And I know a couple on my list are not ones that I think have been very widely seen by people, but I really enjoyed and have recommended to others who have also enjoyed them. So those are the ones I'm going to be trying to kind of highlight this year that I got the most joy out of and were the most well done.
Nothing's better than when you give someone like a TV show or movie and they come back like, yeah, that rocked. And you're just like, yep, I'm good at what I do. What can we say?
I do hate the oversell though, because everybody's got different tastes. So I'm like, I freaking love this. You need to watch this great show ever. They're like, yeah, it was fine. I go, you are clearly, you do not know art, person. Like, It's over your head. Listen to the 47 podcast on it, then you'll understand it better, like me. Okay.
Oh wow, I'm hearing you talk and I'm looking at myself, because absolutely, as I'm nodding in my head, like, oh, I'm sorry you didn't really like that. Yeah, you know, people had mixed reviews. In my head, I go, you plebeian, you do not know art or cinema. Leave my office in this minute and do exactly. not deign to talk to me right now. But in my head, I just go, oh, yeah, it's totally fine that you didn't like this thing that is, you know, highly applauded. That's fine. That's fine for your character and how I know you.
And just as a note, it seems pretty obvious to us, but in case you're a fairly new listener here, we are focusing on more of the prestige TV. We love our reality TV, and we talk about it a lot on this podcast, but that's reality TV. That's an entirely different category, so we're not taking that into consideration for our top five shows of the year, because there was a lot of really good reality TV this year too, Kayla.
There really was, and there's still weeks in the year to talk about it, but I agree. We're talking about scripted shows. We're talking about, you know, the things that we enjoyed, whether everyone enjoyed it or whether, like you said, it was very special for us, and that's okay. I think we have a good, well-balanced list, although you know more of my list than I do of yours. So I'm excited in real time to kind of see where you ranked your top five TV shows and top five movies. Are you ready to get into it?
Let's dive in, Kayla.
All right, Justin, how about you go first? What is your number five TV shows?
My number five top TV show of 2023. I was making this list, and I'm trying to go with some new stuff, a mix of new and old. I just could not, in good conscience, leave off Succession Season 4 as my number five show. We've talked about it a lot. I love the show. I am a huge fan of, like, these high-finance shows and movies. The cast is phenomenal. Every season has been a banger. And with this type of show, everybody was concerned, how are they going to close it out? How are they going to end it? Was it going to be okay? And I think they crushed it. We had the curveball with Logan going down early in the season, and then the end, another kind of curveball thrown in there. I thought Jesse Armstrong and all the creators and people that worked on this did a great job in wrapping this show up.
If you had to put, I guess, along the entire season, a favorite scene, what would you say was your favorite scene of the season? What stands out to you?
The thing that stands out to me is when you had the three siblings kind of together after finding out their father died, and they're kind of very awkward but real reactions to that type of scenario. Like, I just thought that was so well done, and they had that one continuous camera shot that we talked about earlier this year that followed them throughout the entire scene. I just thought that stuck out by far the most to me of anything this season. What about you, Kayla? Anything specific?
I think for me, it's the Tom and Siobhan scene on the patio balcony.
Oh,
that yeah, was great. Just some of the, not just brilliant writing, not some of the most fucking painful, stab you with the pain of these words scene, but the delivery between these two actors was just phenomenal. I mean, whether you're team Tom, your team Siobhan, your team, like, both of these people suck, it was amazing. I mean, I think I'll still, like, rewatch that scene. Like, if I'm kind of on YouTube watching clips, like, I'll go back to that scene.
That was so intense. And just the way both of those actors played it against each other was top notch. That's a great call out, Kayla.
Thank you, Succession. We'll miss you. And hopefully I want all these actors to be in great things, and preferably on my screen, because I'm going to miss them all together, you know? You get used
well,
to it.
Well, good old Siobhan Roy was in a movie I watched recently that will not be making any list anytime soon. Oh, no. The Beanie Bubble. Ooh, that was not very good. But anyway, I digress, Kayla.
Did you just distract me with Beanie Babies? Was it a Beanie Babies themed movie?
Yeah, it was about the rise and fall of Beanie Babies. And she is one of the leads in it, along with, is it Zach Galifianakis? I may be getting the name wrong there.
Whoa, throwback.
It's supposed to be kind of like a funny take on it. It's got a decent cast. You wouldn't guess who it came out through, Apple TV, of course, because that's just what I do. But it just was pretty disappointing. Yeah, Zach Galifianakis, Elizabeth Banks, and Sarah Snook.
Sarah Snook. I gotta say, Elizabeth Banks, as a side note, has really been taking a lot of leaps, I would say, with her career. She's certainly getting a lot into producing. But real turns for Elizabeth Banks. I've been seeing a lot of like, what the hell is this movies? And then, you know, like amazing Elizabeth Banks, but she's been kind of doing a little bit of a up and down for me this year. I gotta say,
didn't she, create the Cocaine Bear movie or directed it?
She sure did. She directed it
or something. Yeah. And yeah, that's not anything I had any interest in seeing personally.
Nope. Same here. Okay. Succession season 4, shout out to that. I'll miss it. My number 5 for television is going to be a show I mentioned before on the pod. It's Kunk on Earth, which came out on Netflix and stars Diane Morgan. I've watched certainly a lot of British television, over the years, especially like kind of an improv, like humor. And the premise of the show, of course, is that she plays this just totally idiotic reporter and she's covering almost like a docu-series of history. So it kind of, the show travels throughout time and she's meeting with these actual experts and, you know, doing kind of a Borat situation, kind of like ridiculous, but instead of like goofy physical comedy, it's just her asking just these stupidest questions and these, you know, intelligent, like historical people just going like, what are you saying? It's kind of dumb in humor, but I think that's what made it so funny, because it's also like a smart humor, the way that she just keeps kind of going down on different paths. It's incredibly funny. If you're into kind of a witty improv humor, I highly recommend Kunk on Earth.
All right. I still have not gotten to that, Kayla, and I don't know if that's really my style of show, but depending on how the next 6 months plays out, I may be looking for anything to watch.
You might be coming back to it. That's great. What is your number 4, Justin?
My number 4, I talked about this at our halfway point of the year, Shrinking on Apple TV. So this stars Jason Segel, Harrison Ford, and Jessica Williams. I really thought this was a well-done, unique show that walked the line of like drama and comedy, like serious conversations, but also adding in the humor almost perfectly. It was created by Bill Lawrence and Brett Goldstein, some of the people that made Ted Lasso. And it's essentially a comedy about a therapist, Jason Segel's character, who's grieving his wife, but he also still has a teenage daughter that he's trying to pick up the role of parent with her. And he's trying to take a more direct role with his clients. So instead of being the typical therapist, he's like, screw it, go do the stupid fucking thing you said you wanted to do. Let's see if that makes you feel better. So it's like all these weird dynamics working together and against each other at the same time, if that makes sense. And I just highly recommend it.
I think you definitely have highly recommended this show. I still haven't managed to get past the first episode, but it's still in
makes you laugh and makes you cry, Kayla. That's up your alley.
It is up my alley. But I haven't, you know, Apple TV is hard for me to click on in the sea of streamers, but it's still on my list. Other people have recommended it to me too. So once I do, I will let you know my thoughts, of course. But Shrinking, yeah, Jason Segel, we missed you, buddy. We missed you.
So what do you have as your number 4, Kayla?
My number 4 was quite the surprise. A Taylor Dane show. It is Lioness Special Ops.
Let's go, Kayla. I was hoping you'd put this on your list so we could talk about it.
I freaking love this show. I went into it like, okay, it's a military show. Zoe Saldana, love her. I didn't know too much else about the plot or the cast. And this show, I binged so hard. And by binge, I mean I couldn't, because I had to wait week to week, which was absurd. I think maybe you got to enjoy it all at once or close to.
I did get to binge it over a couple days, essentially, yeah.
So it was brutal to wait week by week, but it had so many twist turns. It had plot lines that I predicted and was very pleasantly surprised about. I still don't know how this show hasn't been renewed yet. It hasn't necessarily been canceled, but I'm like, how are we having Yellowstone spinoff number 730 on the 1400s, but we have not reviewed Special Ops Lioness, a crime. And make sure you listen to our Lioness episode, of course.
And this was on, that was on what, Paramount Plus? Yeah, so one of the more unique streamers, so a little harder to find. But this is one I wasn't really looking at or that interested in, and you just kept talking it up, and I got in. And after the first episode, I'm like, well, I'm locked in now. I may as well just get through this whole season today or tomorrow. So good recommendation, Kayla.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Your number three, Justin.
Now, I think my number three is going to be higher up on your list. So we could talk about it maybe in a little bit more detail if you mention it later on. But The Last of Us from Max, formerly HBO Max, the TV adaptation of the popular video game. We are big fans. We did weekly kind of breakdowns of it, but we'll get more into that because I assume, Kayla, that's higher up your list.
It absolutely is higher on my list. So you're correct on that. Okay. So my number three is Poker Face.
A little higher than I thought it would be on your list.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this television. We certainly talked about it on the pod, but I think what I enjoyed about it is, although it had a plot line you were kind of following, of course, Natasha. Natasha Lyonne, she's, you know, trying to escape this bad guy from this crime she witnessed, but I enjoyed that every episode had like a plot kind of loosely where she'd end in a new town, she would witness a murder, be proxy to it, then she would solve the crime without intentionally trying to solve the crime every time, but the humor of it would often shift different episodes. How she ended up solving the murder was always a different twist. Sometimes there would be like a super dramatic, intense, artistic episode, and there would be like a totally silly barbecue killing episode. I enjoyed every week just trying to see what, you know, the latest plot line was. And I don't have a lot of TV shows that are like that, you know, that make me surprised every episode because it goes in a slightly different direction. So I'm super excited for season two. I really enjoyed Poker Face.
Yeah, that was it was a really good show. It's created by Rian Johnson, and he kind of loves those mystery type of shows that keep you on your foot, but he like just churns out new stuff pretty regularly. So it's nice that they were able to get Natasha Lyonne, and this was through Peacock, so another kind of unique streaming service. And has this been renewed for a season two? I know they were talking about it.
Oh, but yeah, it's definitely been renewed. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Because I know there were talks when the strike happened, like, oh, maybe this is something we cut, but I assume they're going to bring it back because it was a very popular show.
And it had a ton of surprise celebrity guest stars, and people love that. I certainly enjoyed it. Like, oh my God, they're in this? So great show. Great show. All right, Justin, what is your number two? I presume we might be the same, but now I don't know.
No, there's 0% chance.
Oh,
you have the same number two as me.
Okay.
Or I'm going to say 0.1% chance. I'm going back to the Apple TV well, Kayla.
Okay.
We haven't had a chance to talk about this too much on the pod. It's one that I just binged through entirely. I really enjoyed it. It was uniquely made, no big real stars, and I just thought it was a phenomenal story to kind of follow. And that is Drops of God from Apple TV. So this show is in Japanese, French, and English. So you need to watch it with subtitles unless you're trilingual like that. And like I said earlier, Kayla, I know art. I'm cultured. I can watch things in different languages because that's who I am as a person.
Yeah, say that with a straight face. That's
sorry. Great. But the premise is a woman competes against her estranged and late father's protege in a series of wine tasting competitions to claim his inheritance. And he has the greatest wine collection in the world. So to also claim that. And it's this just cool story about this woman who currently lives in Paris. Her dad was like a teacher and a wine connoisseur in Japan. And he took on a protege and they don't know each other, and she hasn't had a drop of alcohol in over a decade. And now has to remember how to be like the expert wine taster that her father trained her to be when she was, you know, like 8 years old. Yes, I did not mess up that year, that about 8 years old when she started getting trained, maybe earlier, honestly. So I really had a lot of fun with the show. I got my wife into it after badgering her over and over to watch it because she had no interest. And then she cruised right through it too. I've been telling Kayla to watch it, but she doesn't take my recommendations like I do hers, I guess. Just silence, Kayla? You don't got nothing for me, huh?
A call out. That's hilarious and sometimes true, but you know, I try my best. You know, whenever I think of like wine tasting shows, I do think of the episode of Parks and Recreation where April Ludgate joins like a wine tasting competition, but she says the most outrageous things where she just yells out, "I think we can all agree that all wine tastes the same." And she just like, I mean, the references she makes to each cup of wine just gets more ridiculous.
Like me watching the show with my wife, like we want to like know more about wine after watching that show. That's how it is. It like makes you want to learn. And we kind of jokingly, but also kind of not, like if we get wine, we'd like do all the things they do in the show. Like, this is a lighter, so that must be a newer blend. It's a, oh, it's a darker red. That must, it came from a warmer climate, I believe. And judging by the way it sticks to the glass, this is probably like a 2000s vintage. Like, so it gives you all these kind of little tips and tricks, but it's not based on a true story. It is a scripted show. So it's kind of like, these people have superpowers, but their superpower is identifying wines, essentially.
That's actually like a great like story. It's just like the lame powers of superheroes. And they just tell like, I always find it fascinating in real competitions where they somehow know the year. That is just so wild to me, from a sip of wine to be like, that's a 2003. Like
that's what this show like. Crazy. They'll be like, oh yeah, that's from the 1977 Chateau de blah blah blah, but it's on the western edge of the vineyard that's located in this town and was made with this type of soil or something. You're like, what? You took one sniff of this wine and you got that? What happened?
I wonder if it has to be kind of like fashion, kind of like, to quote, you know, a great movie, The Devil Wears Prada, you know, like how she know, like you just know the history based off of what was popular at the time. So like maybe by the taste you can know like, oh, this year, a lot of the popular wines or wines were coming out from this area. Like I would have to imagine, because I don't know how you taste a year from a wine. So I feel like you have to have that knowledge, that history knowledge. Yep. Of different periods and areas that you just like,
and like weather patterns over the years,
like what country is famous. Yes, yes, for like this type of grape only comes from this area and they only did it between these 10 years. I don't know, power to them. That is not my skill. I also drink a lot of sweet wine, so I'd be more like, this tastes like apple because it's apple. So that's great,
Kayla. I'm pretty sure I can guess your number two, because I did leave it off my list, but it deserves to be on a list because I, like I said, I wanted to highlight newer shows that I want people to watch, but unless I'm going way off base here, Kayla, what's your number two?
I'm stunned that you left this off your list, because yep, you did Succession season 4, but you didn't do this show. That,
because I knew for a fact okay, you would have this show on your list, but I wasn't okay, sure if you'd have Succession on
that's
your list.
That's brutal to me, especially since you've, you know, established we have to rank these. So that is yep, a wild yep, acceptance in my brain. But okay. I'm looking at you like I don't even know you. Yeah, my number two is The Bear season 2. Holy yep, fuck. The first season was phenomenal. I mean, I still I'm in awe. I've rewatched it many times now, but season 2, I go, how can they keep the momentum of season 1, where they were, a lot of the plot was based on them struggling in this kitchen, having no money, trying to make this work. Karm is just losing it. How, you know, now they have this money that's kind of stolen. How are they going to make this work? And they did. And they did it phenomenally. And they kept the same emotional core. There were some of the most brilliant episodes ever. Forks, hello. I no longer doubt them going into a season 3, which is inevitable. Like I have no worries about what they're going to do in a season 3, because this show was so good. So yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about The Bear already, but I just loved it.
Yeah, by far one of the best shows on television. Absolutely well done. If you haven't seen The Bear, you are in a hole somewhere. Get out, watch it. It deserves to be seen by everybody, because phenomenal 2 seasons of television.
So good, you guys. Watch The Bear. I've certainly told everyone I know to watch The Bear, but if you haven't, please do. Okay, Justin, you are going to be on your number one. I don't know what your number one is, but if I could guess the first letter of the show, could you tell me if I was right?
Sure, yeah.
C?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm excited to see what it is.
It is Silo.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you misspell Silo? No, I didn't misspell. You gave me a look.
I couldn't remember the difference between the plot of Silo and Citadel, so I think that's where I got confused. But I was thinking.
Oh yeah, I didn't even watch Citadel because I was told it was so bad. So Silo is what you were thinking.
Yes, yes. Silo is what you think. Yes, like the whole plot, because it has that actress from Mission Impossible, right?
It's got Rebecca Ferguson
yes.
in it.
So yeah. in my yep. head, yes, it was Silo, my bad. okay. Go ahead. Tell me about Silo, Justin.
Well, it's another Apple TV show, Kayla. So Silo Hive, stand up. Here we go. 10 episodes. It was renewed for a second season. It's based on a series of books by Hugh Howey. Wolf, Shift, and Dust were the name of the books. And who doesn't love a dystopian sci-fi show, right? It's got phenomenal world building. It's basically, there may have been some type of nuclear thing that happened on the planet. They built this silo that goes hundreds of levels into the ground, and nobody has been outside in hundreds of years. And they just kind of believe it at this point, because if any time anybody does anything, I guess, against the silo, against the government, they get sent outside, and then they see this image that says, okay, this person has died in front of you, essentially. So it's this whole mystery of what's happening, how is the silo built, why are they there, is the outside still contaminated, what's going on? You got Rashida Jones, you got Common, Tim Robbins, there's a few curveballs thrown in there, and that like through line of the mystery element. So I just really love the show, and may buy the book, so I'm like that into the show.
Is this the Apple TV adult version of The 100?
So it's got similar elements to
okay.
it.
Okay.
Not entirely, though, because it is more of like a couple people's mission instead of like a big group. And the whole first season, anyway, takes place within the silo. So they have not ventured out to like the, oh no, the barren wastelands of what's remaining on the planet. So that's probably going to be more of a season two, but it has a similar kind of feel to it.
It does remind me of The 100 that we may not have gotten but wanted out of every season. So
yeah, they had a great few seasons and a terrible few seasons, that show, The 100, Kayla.
They did. It was good when I got you, we got everyone into it, and then unfortunately it took a big turn. Okay, The Silo, that's also been on my list. I know, I really gotta.
Another recommendation Kayla hasn't watched. Kate,
whatever.
That's okay. What, third on my list
listen,
so far?
Listen, let's not count them, okay? Let's not count them. We'll leave it at that. Okay, that's a good number one. I don't know if it's good, but I assume so, because I think it was, you know, you mentioned a lot. And people
yeah, you haven't
about
watched it.
It,
Kayla. Watch it, then tell
I
me
I would know, actually.
One.
Okay, so let's return to my number one, which, of course, was your three, I believe, The Last of Us.
Yep.
This show, I remember last year we... you know, wishing that I could have this on my list last year. What can I say about this show other than it was phenomenal? I'm playing the second game right now. Again, I've mentioned many times, I play these games over and over. They're so freaking fun. They're actually coming out with a remastered version. These are PlayStation only games soon this year. So that'll be exciting with the new graphics, and they'll have, I guess they're going to have like extra scenes and different things you can do from the second game. So that is awesome. No announcement for a third game, which I was kind of hoping I would hear by this time when we were watching this show in January. Feels like forever. But yeah, this show was amazing. I saw this on a lot of lists online as the number one show. Pedro Pascal really having an amazing year. Gotta say, he is crushing it. Yeah, I mean, it was a great show. What do you think about it as your number three?
I'm with you. I absolutely love the show. Pedro Pascal, Bella Ramsey, both great in it. I did not play the video game like you, but I got pretty hooked pretty immediately on the show. It is a little disappointing that season two is now pushed to 2025, I believe, from the latest report. So we got to wait a whole extra at least 13 months for that, Kayla. But I'm excited to watch season two as soon as it comes out. This is going to be at the top of the prestige TV show list until it runs its course, in my opinion.
Yes, I think supposedly filming is going to pick up around February of next year. They were very ready to do the show, and of course the strikes happened, so things got postponed. There was an announcement. I'm kind of waiting for like the official status of it, but it seems like the amazing actress Caitlin Dever is going to play an important character from the second game. I'm not sure how I feel about that yet, but she's a phenomenal actress, and there's some time before the show, so I won't go into too many detail about that, but The Last of Us is phenomenal. What can I say? It's a great, great TV show, great game. comics
and
as
another
well.
Kind of dystopian sci-fi type show.
We love it.
There were a lot last year or this past year. So watch them all.
Watch them all, guys.
The world's going to look like in about 50 years. So.
You know, these are our top fives, but listen, like any of these shows and even others we left out are phenomenal. So just, you know, grab the remote, watch a couple TV shows. You won't regret them unless you watch terrible ones. Shall we
just watch the ones that we tell you to watch? Just, yeah, don't pull a Kayla and not watch it after I recommend it.
Anywho, shall we go on to the rich world of cinema? I don't know about you, Justin, but I feel like I watched way more movies this year, especially in theater, than I have maybe ever.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. And this year for the pod, for these types of end of year podcasts, I have tried logging all the TV shows and movies I've watched throughout the year. And, you know, maybe I missed one here or there, like when I was on vacation, watched through and I forgot to log it. But currently on December 9th, I've watched 57 different series of television, or at least seasons of television at the minimum. Some of those are like all the way through Modern Family. So like 10 seasons of Modern Family is included as one in that 57. So that's too much TV. And then when I look at the movies, I'm at 147 movies so far this year, Kayla, that I've watched. And I'd say, how many have we seen in theaters? You've probably seen a couple dozen, and I've probably seen like 15 in theaters, at least one or two a month, right? So it's been a fun year to get back into the movies.
It's insane the amount of movies I've seen in theaters this year. I mean, truly, like, and many weeks where I've seen multiple in a week. So definitely Movie Tavern, I think, owes me some sort of money for the amount of money I spent for them. I need to cut some sort of deal with them because it's crazy. But yeah, there were a lot of good movies. I'm really glad I got to see a great chunk of them with you. It's always fun to see when we agree on films. Like when we saw Napoleon, I think we both were looking at each other like having the exact same thoughts. And then sometimes where you can see I'm utterly enthralled, yep, like a Fast X, and I just know that you are feeling maybe the opposite way right next to me. And even vice versa in some of the films where, you know, you liked a lot more than I did. And so that's always fun.
And we still got more coming out. And I looked at my list quickly. I saw, it looks like 17 movies in theaters this year. And I know you've probably seen double because you venture into the horror genre that is not my domain at all.
I had to have seen close to 40.
30 or 40.
Easy. Like if I'm thinking about it. I mean, literally 2 weeks ago, I saw three films in the theater in 1 week. So had to be close to that. That's wild to me. And I'm not doing the math on that money because I don't want to know. We just pretend I'm looking away.
That's Kayla's retirement fund right there, folks.
You know, I won't have a place to live in, but I will have my cinema and memories. Okay, let's get into our top five. I'll go first on this one. This was difficult. And again, I just got to say, they're all my favorites. But these are a ranking I had to do, but... it feels like to rank one between like three and four feels like the largest gap. I'm saying basically this movie's trash, but truly it was a very thin line, I think, between some of these films. So my number five is going to be a movie that I don't think is in a lot of top five lists, but for me, it just hit my humor, my entertainment, and it's going to be The Marvels. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That threw me for a loop, Kayla. But I know you're a big fan of Captain Marvel and Brie Larson, so not totally surprised.
Yeah, you know what it is? I obviously watch a lot of dark and sad cinema, and so I really just appreciate, like, a movie I just intentionally don't take too serious, meaning I'm not looking at it with my Marvel glasses going, this plot line doesn't make sense, and what does this mean for, you know, certainly there were many, many plot lines and decisions and some of the acting that had me flabbergasted at the movie. But I went with my sister and I laughed so many times in the theater. It just was funny to see three great actresses in a movie like this, in a Marvel movie. Hard times for Marvel overall, but I just found this movie like super funny. I did not read into what this means for Captain Marvel, what this means for Miss Marvel, all of the future of X-Men. Like, I wasn't really super worried about that. I just enjoyed it for what it was. And that's why I was a number five, because I found it incredibly entertaining and I didn't take it seriously. So, yep.
All right. And that is not one I have watched yet. So I will have to watch that on Disney Plus, as they say. So,
yes, yes, absolutely.
Right. My number five, Kayla. Now, like you said, it was difficult to rank these movies and figure out where that cutoff was. So when I was deciding between where the cutoff was, I went with what was really well done that I just had fun going to see. And this is Barbie. All right. This was just a fun experience. Everybody got dressed up. We went in a group. We saw it. We got lunch. We turned it into a double feature. It was such a fun time. It got just tons of people to the theaters again for the first time in really a couple years. And I would not have thought it going in. I really had no interest in seeing Barbie, but Greta Gerwig really kind of put her own twist on this, made it her own in a unique way. And it was hilarious. It was funny. It leaned into itself a lot. So it didn't try to kind of, turn everything upside down and turn this into a big dramatic portrayal of Barbie and everything she's gone through. It brought people in to get the major points across. The only real big issue I had with the movie was the whole Will Ferrell section. That was kind of stupid to me. You know, I was like, this could have been better. Like, everything else was great. When you're giving me Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie singing and dancing, I'm all here for it. I have an I Am Knuff sweater, so I'm in, Kayla.
Listen, Barbie is so kind of intricately, like, tied to Oppenheimer, because obviously it was the event of the year. It was so awesome to work so hard to figure out the best day and time to do a Barbenheimer. I don't know if we'll get that again, but I really enjoyed it for what it was. And Barbie was just a delight beginning to end, whether you played with Barbies, whether you didn't, you know, if you just enjoy Margot Robbie, if you just enjoy Ryan Gosling. For me, definitely the Will Ferrell stuff and some of just the plot line of the, the Kens taking over and all of that. I know that always worked for me. I listened to the Billie Eilish song, What Was I Made For, like, all the time, though. It is so sad, but really good. So I really enjoyed Barbie. I mean, we left and we had a delight at the theater. So, and I think the whole crowd was into it. So Barbie is a great choice. And, like, the number one movie, I think, as far as gross. I don't know. Yeah. So
pretty sure it's still number one. Yep.
I've heard some rumors they might make a sequel. How do you feel about that? Even despite, you know, Greta Gerwig going, I think it's a one and done. Money might talk.
So if Greta Gerwig's not doing it, I probably won't see the sequel at all. And it doesn't sound like she's very interested in doing a sequel, because let's get her with all of these Netflix movies out the door here in the next couple of years. So what else? I mean, how are they going to really take how that ended and turn it into another movie? Like, you're not going to get the same actors. You're not going to get Greta Gerwig, most likely. It's going to be one of those sequels where they're just using the brand name and the success of the first one. And then you're going to have a whole bunch of middling kind of actors, middling director doing the second one just for a cash grab, and it's going to flop. That's what I think is going to happen.
Fair enough. But how many times have we looked at a movie and go, there's no way there could be another one, and then it's like a five movie franchise?
That's a very good point. Yeah. She'll just become a superhero.
Yes. I mean, Barbie can be anything, so that wouldn't be too surprising. We'll have to see. I have enjoyed kind of the memes about Margot Robbie saying that, like, Greta Gerwig's her kind of muse. Like, she wants to be in every Greta Gerwig movie for the next 10 years. And they're talking about Saoirse Ronan. They're like, defend your throne, Saoirse Ronan, because she previously had always worked with Saoirse Ronan, even tried to get her for a little bit in this movie, but it didn't work out scheduling wise. But I thought that so funny to have those two actresses vying for Greta Gerwig. We shall see. Even Timothée Chalamet is in the mix. So great choice. My number four is a movie that I didn't even want to see, but felt that I owed Kayla with a C, because she sees any movie that I usually ask her to see with
me.
So
you listened to her recommendation. Interesting. Okay, continue.
Anywho, and it is Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. I think she was surprised even at the end of the film when I had kind of ranked it higher after we saw it than she did, but I just found it, like, really affecting. It, I had read the book when I was a kid, but I didn't even remember the plot. You know me, when it comes to like teen coming of ages, it's really hard for me to get into them. But I found it like such a sincere, sweet movie about, you know, getting older as a girl and friendships and popular crowds and family. And it just was so heartwarming and good. It definitely made me cry. It made me like just laugh at similar feelings of when you're just like very unsure of yourself and, you know, what you think being older is going to be for you and fitting in and not fitting in. So I really enjoyed this movie. It had a great cast. I think it was very well casted. In relation, I watched them. Have you ever seen Eighth Grade, the Bo Burnham movie that was highly?
Yeah, it was really good.
Yep. I couldn't, I never was more painful like watching a movie than Eighth Grade. And I don't mean that in terms of the quality of the film, but it was so raw. It so sat in the anxiety and awkwardness and of a girl going to eighth grade.
That's Bo Burnham style.
I couldn't handle it. Like, it was almost too real of an experience, or just like, and maybe it helped that her character was Kayla in the movie. You don't hear a lot of Kaylas. But it was too hard to like watch her go through. Like, I felt like I was going through it. It was too intense. So I recommend Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. I mean, it's great to see with your kids. Great to see, I think, just as an adult watching, you know, really good movies. So Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, my number four.
All right, Kayla, my number four. Now, my 2 through 4, I've changed the order on about 6 dozen times here. My number one was set. My number 5 was pretty set. But 2 through 4... the order is just kind of going back and forth, but I landed on one of my favorite directors. I think everything he does is just top notch and very well thought out. I'm going with David Fincher's new Netflix film, The Killer, with Michael Fassbender, Charles Parnell, Tilda Swinton, just under 2 hours. It is, you know, basically a story about this really well-paid assassin who has an assassination attempt go awry. And how is he going to get out of the situation and protect the people that he wants to protect? But it's not just that, right? It's also a comedy. It's about this guy who thinks he has this process in place and he is the best at what he does and he can't be wrong. But he's also kind of shitty at his job sometimes and screws up and makes stupid mistakes and doesn't really have that self-reflection on it. So I just thought Michael Fassbender's portrayal in this was great. It was just under 2 hours. It's one of those movies that I'm really excited to get multiple rewatches in, knowing more context going in and how it plays out, so I can kind of see the comedic elements coming a little bit more quickly. Because after the first watch, it starts out like this is a very serious film. It's about this guy who's trying to assassinate somebody. Okay. And then it just kind of keeps bouncing around. They do a lot of unique things with the camera and the sound in this, between what he's listening into his earbuds, plus like the personal affirmations he keeps telling himself. I'm pretty much in for anything David Fincher, Kayla.
Oh yeah, 100%. This was, you know, we really haven't talked about this movie because we saw it at different times. So I love The Killer. Love. It was a great film, like you said, exactly as you described. Any movie that just has The Smiths as a soundtrack, although sometimes controversial, is phenomenal. So funny. It also had one of the greatest fight scenes I think I saw this year. That fight scene in the house was phenomenal, brutal. I was like, how are these people not dead? That was so good. And I just love that the film does take itself so seriously, even though it knows it's being comedic. Like, it doesn't kind of lean in. It just lets the comedy happen because, like you said, he's not the great assassin he has in his mind. Super funny. Yeah, I highly recommend The Killer, and it's on Netflix. So definitely check it out.
Just you mentioned that fight scene. Then the scene with Michael Fassbender and Tilda Swinton at the restaurant where they're sitting there staring at each other like, hey, we kind of know what's going to happen, but she's going to try her whiskeys and meal, and he's just going to sit there and stare at her just in view of the entire public. Don't know about that move, but just a really fun movie to watch. Now, the only real, I guess, downside or criticism I've heard from this is it starts a little slow. The first 45 minutes or so drags a little bit. Now, I think that's intentional. In order for you, well, of course it is. It's David Fincher. For you to get into the mindset of this character, like, this is, it's very like repetitive. Like he keeps doing these same things. These redundancies are in place. Like you have to get into his mental state before you can move forward with the film. But you know, if you're not really into things that start slowly, give this a chance. After you get past that 30, 45 minutes, it really picks up.
Definitely check out The Killer. I also recommend that. My number three is going to be A Good Person. Directed by Zach Braff, starring an actress maybe I've talked about once or twice, Florence Pugh.
I gave you a look like I don't even remember this movie, and then you said, yeah, Florence Pugh. So anything Florence Pugh makes Kayla's list for sure.
Whatever. I've seen this movie a ridiculous amount of times, and no, it's not just because of Florence Pugh, but partly. I've showed it to different people. They really enjoyed it. I think you really enjoy, if you enjoy Garden State, it is definitely an intense movie. Deals with addiction, but just has some of the amazing acting from Florence Pugh. I mean, a lot of times it's her having to convey so much about what this character is going through, this addiction, this guilt that she has for what she experienced. You have Morgan Freeman in it. Also Delight, his role in this film, and it was so good. I mean, I bought the DVD. That says it all. There's a scene in particular where Florence Pugh's character is like just really low, and she's looking at the mirror. She's looking in this mirror, and her mom is like just not noticing what she's going through, and is just talking at her through the door. And we can do this, and we can do that, and she has to just convey this like self-hatred as she's looking in the mirror, and this kind of like realization of like how much she doesn't like herself. And she does it without saying anything. And it is some of the most profound acting in just like how she has her face, how she has this like acceptance of like how she feels about herself is phenomenal. There's comedy in it as well. Yeah, I highly recommend this film. I remember I tried to see it in theaters for like ever. It was not in any theaters near me. Brutal. But yeah, highly recommend. A Good Person.
All right, Kayla. So I'll go into my number three. This is probably higher up on your list. If so, let me know and we could talk about it more when we get to it on your list. But Killers of the Flower Moon.
Let's talk about it together because that is also okay. My number two.
All right. So, yeah. So, Killers of the Flower Moon. We had a big podcast on this a few weeks ago. It's the new Scorsese flick. It is 3.5 hours. It is very long. It's got a lot of big name actors and also people that have come out of nowhere. And it's telling a really important story through an interesting perspective. And the cool thing that Scorsese did with this is he changed the whole kind of format of the film. Instead of it being kind of an FBI procedural about everything that the Osage Nation was going through at that time with all of these crazy murders and all the, basically the white men screwing them over and how the FBI kind of steps in. But he doesn't go through that perspective. He goes through people that are in the community and how it's impacting them and how it's impacting their families and the future of all of their families. And I just thought it was a phenomenal film. It was one that needed to be told. And I think we both had, this isn't one where you have a good time at the movies. It's just one that you're glad you saw it in the theater so you can really get the full feel that the director is trying to give you with this.
Exactly what you said. I left this movie just, I mean, you sit in devastation, I think, a lot through this film because, of course, any movie that is based off of real history, you're also thinking about the actual real people that went through this. And so I think that always adds an element of, like, real emotion because it's not just, like, fictional characters. It certainly made me a lot more interested in Indigenous history. I felt like, wow, I didn't know anything about this. I got the book. I got, actually, other books, too. It was very moving. I think I definitely am looking forward to a second watch, kind of knowing what's going to happen to see, you know, Lily Gladstone and Leo. Like I had a different, I've talked about this previously, but I thought it was a different kind of movie as far as their relationship that ended up being. So that really threw me throughout the movie. I had to kind of reconcile, like, I didn't realize Leonardo DiCaprio is this like evil guy. And so that was.
I really
hope
she wins best actress.
Like, I did too.
She was so good. She didn't need to say a lot. It was a lot of her mannerisms, her facial expressions carried a lot of the movie.
She just carries this like power to her a bit that I feel like if I were in front of her, like I would just be like, you know, like she just has this like aura to her. It's phenomenal. I can't wait to see what she does next as well. So yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon was great. And in fact, it might be better to watch it at home because you can kind of do a pause if you need to go to the bathroom versus the 3.5 we were in the theater.
Iron bladder here, Kayla.
Yeah. 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 Not your wife though. Not your wife. Okay. I assume we have the same number one. We have to actually. I actually insist we have the same number one. Okay.
We definitely have the same number one. Now my number. So I guess we're on my number two now.
Oh,
your number two was Killers of the Flower Moon.
Okay, yes.
So we did that in combination with my number three. My number two, I was very close to being Killers of the Flower Moon, but I went with a movie that just pretty much is right up my freaking alley here. It's probably not on a lot of lists, but Air.
Okay.
So it's the Ben Affleck directed movie that came out earlier this year. It's basically about Michael Jordan getting his first deal with Nike and how it revolutionized kind of the sneaker business. It brought Nike to a new frontier and it changed the entire marketing and endorsement game for athletes and companies at that scale. And I obviously am a big sports fan, business. Like I love kind of getting into the financial aspects of like how they changed the game. This is Ben Affleck, Matt Damon are in this. Viola Davis plays Michael Jordan's mother in this movie and is phenomenal. And it's the first film that was put out by the new company Artist Equity that Ben Affleck was a part of founding, where it's this artist-led studio that tries to even out the relationships between the talent, the studios, and the distributors. So it's one of those that you don't see made a ton now that gets theatrical releases anyway. It's under $100 million to make it. It was under 2 hours. It didn't have a big theatrical release. I actually think it made less than what its budget was theatrically, but it did go pretty much directly to Amazon Prime. So that's kind of how they released it here. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good story. And I was nervous going in because a lot of times these sports kind of, not exactly documentaries, but close to it, just drop the ball. They take things too seriously or they go in a weird direction. This one had comedic elements to it. It knew what to lean into and what not to. Ben Affleck plays the head of Nike, like the founder of Nike, and he is just like this ridiculous guy, which just adds that little extra humor. He's blonde, looks absurd, but I know you have no interest in Air, Kayla, but if anybody's kind of a sports fan or interested in that time period, I'd give it a watch on Amazon.
Rude. I wouldn't say I had zero. We saw it all together, actually in the theaters, and you know, I don't have a lot of the like shoe sports knowledge. So going into it, I was very like, I'm not going to know any of these references that they're saying, or even the weight of this shoe deal, like had no, I know he has them, but I also found it interesting not to kind of have him as a character. Have we had a Michael Jordan show movie? We've had the documentary, you know, the Chicago Bulls one, but
you mean like a movie where somebody like plays
biopic
Michael Jordan?
Or biopic or.
I don't think we've had one that's besides that ESPN 10-part documentary. I don't think we've had one or one that's been like critically acclaimed anyway.
So it's interesting to do a movie about him and not kind of center him a bit. I did enjoy the film. I followed it. And I really think that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon like have gone so dramatic in some of their choices that I enjoy when they're just being like ridiculous, you know, people together. That's fun. They have such a great chemistry. I imagine that's how their real friendship is too. Like just like,
yeah, exactly.
Bullshit. And then like calling each other out and joking around. Like, so it was fun to see like two characters like that. And Ben Affleck, well, there's been some L's this year in terms of cinema for him. So Air was good. I'm surprised it was your number two.
You liked
but
it a little bit more than what I thought I remembered with you watching it. But yeah, it's a super well done film. And like you said, I think it it was a smart choice to not focus on Michael Jordan as a character, mm-hmm. but to focus on all the behind the scenes stuff and put Viola Davis as his mother as the spotlight of the film. Because once you cast somebody as Michael Jordan and they have a big role, then that's pretty much everything everybody's focusing on right away. And, oh, wow, Michael wouldn't have done that. He doesn't look like that. So just having him as kind of a secondary side, off to the side character was really smart.
I totally agree with that. Let's get to our shared number one. We've come to the same decision in our rankings for our number one, paired well, of course, with Barbie. It is Oppenheimer. Have you heard of it? was absolutely number one, blown away by this film. It continued to be in theaters for many, many weeks after it premiered because of how many people were trying to see this film. I won't say it's a perfect film, but it's damn near close. Christopher Nolan's doing things that are just amazing as far as graphics, as far as like acting choices, as far as just how he encompassed so much in this film. I actually haven't seen it for a second time. The Blu-ray is sold out, and I can't tell you the last time a Blu-ray, okay, has been sold out, because that's how popular this movie is. And that's how much people are trying to see this movie. We saw it in theaters, and I think that was the truest, best experience to have with a film like this. It was moving. It was visually like stunning. Great movie. Number one.
Completely agree with everything you said. Cillian Murphy's performance was top notch. I think you could probably lock up that he's going to win best actor this year for his portrayal. Just a great movie. Like I said earlier, we had the double feature, Barbie first. We ended with this. We ended with the serious movie at night. We really wanted to kind of sit in it, take it in, have the night to think about it. And I think that was the right call on our end. The Trinity test in the theaters, where he cuts out all the sound and then you just see the explosion, was one of the coolest scenes I think I've ever seen on the big screen. And, you know, props to Christopher Nolan, because he loves these kind of big tentpole, you know, high budget movies. But, you know, it's close to getting it's over $900 million worldwide right now in box office. So it's going to, it may not hit the billion, but it's going to be pretty damn close to hitting $1 billion in the box office for a 3-hour rated R movie, basically a historical drama. So those are not ones that typically do $1 billion type of box office numbers. So I think it's got to be at the top of pretty much everybody's list, or at least in the top few, Kayla.
And I certainly hope that we get an Oscar for Robert Downey Jr., because this was a phenomenal role. And I think it really comes out in the last third of the movie, is kind of him taking center stage and taking this turn. And it was a difficult topic. This subject often is on debates on many, you know, social media, on articles about how he did it and if he did it well or not. But I think that's up for every viewer to decide, as any type of art. But I just thought it was like really, really amazing. And I'm excited to see it for another time when I can buy the Blu-ray, because right now it's sold out, you know?
Yeah, and I want to watch it again, too. Kind of knowing the little type of intricacies throughout after the first watch, you'll probably pick up on more things the second watch, because as we know with Christopher Nolan movies, he loves to manipulate time. So you kind of have these dueling timelines. So usually those take multiple watches to really get a grasp of what they're trying to portray.
Absolutely. All right, let's do a quick run of our TV shows and movies. I'll go first between both. So from 5 to 1 for TV shows for me is Kunk on Earth, Lioness Special Ops, Poker Face, The Bear Season 2, and The Last of Us. And then for my films, The Marvels, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, A Good Person, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Oppenheimer.
My TV shows were Succession Season 4, Number 5, then Shrinking, The Last of Us, Drops of God, and Silo. So a lot of Apple TV representation, because I stay true to form there. And then for my movies, I had Barbie as number 5, The Killer as number 4, Killers of the Flower Moon number 3, Air number 2, and we agreed, finally, Kayla, Oppenheimer, best movie we've seen so far this year.
Do you think it'll win Best Picture?
You know, I don't know. I think they're getting a little pushback. I'm going to say I don't think it wins Best Picture. But I think you're going to get Cillian Murphy winning Best Actor, maybe Robert Downey Jr. Best Supporting Actor. I know there's been a lot of push for Emily Blunt as Supporting Actress. I don't agree with that, personally. I don't think she should. That role was a little not fleshed out. But that's a typical Christopher Nolan thing, not fleshing out the female characters fully.
Does not know how to portray women, but, you know, we power through.
Do you think it'll win?
I think it might. I don't think it's out of contention. I do.
We both have very big opinions. And, I don't know, probably not.
It's hard. I gotta kind of look at the – I haven't yet hit my brain mode into Oscar season quite yet, where I've kind of looked at the gauntlet of films. But I think it could, yeah. Yeah, I definitely do. All right, so let's do a kind of wrap up final discussion here. Is there any show or movie that you had right at the bottom, your number six on the list, that could have been number five? Is there anything that you were like, this could have gone in?
Well, on the TV show list, I said I left out The Bear because I knew it was on your list, so I'm gonna say that's not in consideration here. The next closest one I had was Daisy Jones and the Six. I really enjoyed that. That was kind of a fun watch. I don't think it was quite as well done as the other shows, but it was a good show to kind of binge through quickly. What about you, Kayla?
I think for me, it was definitely Succession. I enjoyed Past Lives for film, so that was...
I haven't seen that yet. That's on the list of movies I really want to see. Past Lives and Maestro.
Past Lives was not the movie totally that I thought it was. And it is a slow film, like... Okay. It's totally on the emotional weight of what it's about, but I did really enjoy that. The Dungeons and Dragons movie was also a delight, especially with all my Dungeons and Dragons friends. So we laughed a lot. Yeah, in that movie.
I was between that and Barbie for my number five, honestly, just because of the experience. Because we got the whole D&D group out to go to the movies together, which was a lot of fun. But I think Barbie as a movie was just a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, actually a lot a bit better in my opinion.
I did have Air, but it wasn't, I don't think it was fighting for number six. And I did enjoy The Covenant, I think a little more than you, but I did enjoy that film too. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the other one I had on my list here was Dumb Money. This is a movie I just saw in theaters by myself while you and my wife were watching something else. And this is just, I love finance movies and these types of things, that I thought it was uniquely done with Paul Dano, Pete Davidson, you know, Nick Offerman, Seth Rogen are in this, and it's about the GameStop saga. So I was interested in that because of primarily the topic, and then they made some interesting choices. So not quite up to like a 4 or 5 VHS tape movie, but in that, you know, 3, 3.5 range.
Where a lot of our movies reside, I think. What was the worst film you watched this year?
Oh, I have... three that were in contention, Kayla. The number one worst movie that I watched in 2023 was an Apple TV film.
Okay.
It has a couple big names here. We have Adrian Brody, Chris Evans, Ana de Armas. Wow, we got a loaded cast. This is going to be great. Ghosted. Absolutely atrocious. If you look at my letterbox, I gave it 0.5 VHS tapes.
Half a star.
Like, didn't even crack one. The premise, Chris Evans falls in love with Ana de Armas, who is like secretly some crazy agent, and he tries to track her down because he's in love with her and gets caught into this middle of gun battles and fights, and it's just terribly done. They don't have any chemistry. It sucks.
Wow. Okay. I didn't watch that because I saw how much it got shredded online, and I said, yeah, I'm
that's
kind of
why
time.
I watched it, because I was like, can it be as bad as everybody is saying? And the answer is yes it can be. If you want to laugh at a movie, watch it. If you want to watch a good movie, don't even consider this.
Don't even consider it. For me, it's between two movies, but I gotta say Hypnotic is the worst movie that I saw, starring Ben Affleck. A movie I never would have picked myself, but unfortunately, when I'm home for the holidays, my parents' taste in films doesn't always match mine. And so somehow we settled on this movie because we can never agree on one. I said, whatever, okay. Even though I knew from the trailer it was going to be a terrible movie.
The trailer looked bad.
And to be fair, it became enjoyable because we made fun of it. I mean, it's all on the premise that people have this ability to hypnotize people to... essentially make them do things and they don't remember it. And it's the stupidest plot ever in the world. Wild.
Did you, one other movie that was close, I gave it one VHS tape. Did you watch 65 on Netflix?
You know I didn't, and you know why.
Oh, there's dinosaurs.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. You already know.
Yeah, so astronaut crash lands on a mysterious planet that's basically inhabited by dinosaurs 65 million years before or whatever. Adam Driver and Ariana Greenblatt, you think it would be good. It's not. It's really, it was like tough for me to get through. And once I start a movie, it's really difficult for me to turn it off. But I was considering it during this film. It just, how could it be so bad? How could Adam Driver be in a movie that is that poor, Kayla? I don't know. But it happened.
He's either in like total flops or he just becomes Italian in movies, which we'll see in Ferrari. So I just, that's like his two modes there, post Girls. My other one was You Hurt My Feelings, which was an A24 film that I had been hearing a lot of buzz on, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, about the premise of being in a marriage, and she's an author and she finds out her husband actually like hates the book that she's writing. She overhears it, and kind of how she deals with that dynamic of knowing he hates her work and didn't tell her that. Dreadful. I mean, I watched it to the end, but it was pretty boring. I think I gave it half a star on Letterboxd. So some real zingers out there, but we're committed. We watched them, you guys. Is there anything that is coming out in the next few weeks that you think might hit your top five, meaning that you feel kind of confident that it would push through another movie or TV show?
Yeah. Ferrari.
Ferrari. 100%. Okay.
I'm really interested. Adam Driver again, hopefully in a better movie, playing Enzo Ferrari. Michael Mann film. Those are usually a lot of fun. I'm intrigued. Give me this, just inject it into my veins. Let's see it happen, Kayla.
I'm excited for Ferrari, even though, again, I know absolutely nothing on the history of Ferrari. I'm between, so I, The Boy and the Heron is something I'm hoping to see this week. Studio Ghibli, I mean, I love his anime. I'm personally not really an anime watcher, but I find his films to be just so good. It doesn't hurt that the dubbed version of this movie has,
Kayla.
Florence Pugh as a voice. That has indicator of why I need to see this film in theaters. But, I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch, there's so many. There's Robert Pattinson playing this, like, voice you would never attribute to him. It is this, like, almost William Dafoe voice. No, it's not the Batman voice. It's almost like William Dafoe in nature. And also William Dafoe's in this movie. So I'm excited to see it. This was supposedly going to be his last movie. He's in other things like Kiki's Delivery Service, my favorite, Spirited Away, Totoro. Like, he's done remarkable in anime. But he's doing more. So this isn't the last one. So, but I'm excited to see it.
What about The Holdovers, Kayla? I hear that's getting a lot of Oscar buzz. The preview didn't necessarily look that appealing to me. But now that it's getting this buzz, I'm kind of contemplating going to see it.
I want to see it, so let's see it together. Okay. If it comes out for us, because I don't know too much on the plot, but I also have been hearing a lot of things, so I'm in it. Let's check out The Holdovers. The other movie that I think might hit my top five is The Iron Claw. I'm super hyped to see this movie, and I know nothing about wrestling, but I'm excited.
Yeah, so what we're saying is there's still a lot of stuff coming out here. May December just came out, the new Natalie Portman, Julianne Moore film on Netflix, as well as there's another Julia Roberts, Mahershala Ali movie that just came out on Netflix as well, which is Leave the World Behind. So we'll obviously be watching those in the near future and see if those move up our list.
Absolutely. Is there anything that you're anticipating for 2024 that you're excited to see? Of course, a lot of things have unfortunately been pushed back to later days, 2025 and beyond. But is there anything that you're just like, I cannot wait for this to come out? I have a bunch, but what about you?
I mean, at the top of my list, I've been screaming it from the rafters for over a year here. Dune Part 2.
Finally.
I need it. I am so excited. I'm like irrationally excited about this movie, and I want to watch it, and I want to watch it multiple times in theaters, and I want to rewatch the original Dune like five more times. I've already seen it like five times, but just keep rewatching the original Dune. What about you, Kayla?
Dune.
It seems like you're very excited about Dune as well, right?
I can't wait, and I'm really hoping they re-release Dune 1 because I didn't see it in theater. So I would love to be able to see that again. It is on Netflix too, if you want to watch it, but please, this was supposed to come out and now we have to wait till March. And what's worse is they keep like doing all this promotion now that they can. And Dennis is saying this is even better than the first film. And I'm just sitting here like, I cannot believe I have to wait 3 more months to see this movie. I'm also excited for Joker 2. I don't know too much about Bob Marley other than the highlights, but I gotta say the trailer for One Love looks really interesting. And it looks really well done too. A Quiet Place Day One, which is not a sequel to the second one. It's actually like kind of a spinoff. I'm excited for that. Inside Out 2, if you're into the cartoons. Inside Out 1 fucked me up as far as like self-realization. So, and they have a second one and a new character called Anxiety. So at this point, is Disney in my house? I don't know.
Character is called Anxiety. To love it.
Yes, played by Maya Hawke, which is absolutely delightful. Mission Impossible 2. We finally get part 2, Justin, after our Mission Impossible review. So,
yeah, and that's one of those things. I really like the Mission Impossible movies, but when you have the part 1, part 2, yes. Part 1 is always disappointing because it just ends without the closure that you need. So part 2 better pick it up.
I liked part 1 a lot more than you, if I recall. So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens.
I think I gave it 3.5 VHS tapes, so it had room to grow for me.
Beetlejuice 2, I'm not sure how that's going to be, but I'm excited. And Gladiator 2, which is going to come out next year.
Did I just completely miss that there's a Gladiator 2 coming out?
Like, shut up. Movie? You haven't followed anything about Gladiator 2 with Paul Mescal, Pedro Pascal?
No, I know nothing about Gladiator 2. Now I'm pumped. Stop. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Be prepared to be inundated. It's been everywhere. Yep.
Okay, well, that's something else to add to my list, Kayla.
Yes. TV is pretty rough, I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of movies coming out. And there's a show I don't think you've heard of that I think might be up your alley once more is released. But did you know that Alfonso Cuarón from, of course, your favorite Tar, he's doing a TV show called Disclaimer with Cate Blanchett. So,
I do love Tar, so I'm in for that. I also am interested to see what HBO series return next year. I've been patiently awaiting the next season of Industry. I really love that show on is now Max, so that was supposed to come out this year, got pushed. Now it's supposed to be out kind of late spring or summer of next year.
Will you be watching Welcome to Derry with me, which is all about Pennywise the clown? No. Killer clown?
No. 0% chance. Not even close. Not even on my radar. Blinders on, turning the other way. Can't watch that, Kayla.
Fair enough. There's a Masters of Air show that's coming out, too, with Austin Butler about the Bomber Boys in World War II. That looks pretty good. Griselda, starring Sofia Vergara. She plays, like, a cocaine trafficker, and that seems like a really intense kind of drama, so.
But Sofia Vergara is playing?
Yes, correct. And she looks, like, almost unrecognizable in some scenes, like clips that I've seen, so. Yep. Well, there's some things to look forward to, you guys. I'm sorry we're painting it as this desolate future, but there will be some gems, and there's certain to be some what the hells, and we'll cover it all, of course. Any final thoughts, Justin? You good? Ready for our Swirly of the Week?
Yeah, let's get into our Swirly of the Week, Kayla. All right, so Swirly of the Week this week for me is Florida State University football. So Florida State, they're in the ACC. Currently, college football has this 4-team playoff system where they have a committee that picks 4 teams to go against each other, ranks them 1 through 4 for the national championship that year. They've been doing it for about 10 years, and for the most part, it's been pretty simple. They pick the best teams, and then if there's an undefeated team that wins one of the big conferences, like the SEC or the Big 12 or Big 10 or ACC, they pretty much get in. So this year, Florida State goes undefeated 13-0 in the ACC. They did not lose a game, and they did not make the college football playoff. They did not make one of the top 4 teams. Instead, Texas gets in with 1 loss, because they beat Alabama in Alabama. And then the big controversy is Alabama makes it in as the 4 seed after losing to Texas earlier this year. So Florida State did everything they could, won every game, did everything right, and they still could not get into the conversation for the championship. It's got to be frustrating for them. The only thing that the committee pointed to was their starting quarterback got injured a few weeks ago. He's not going to be healthy, so they think that's going to impact the team. Honestly, is a fair statement to make by them. I think it's going to be a better game the way they have it set up, Alabama versus Michigan in the first round, than Florida State. But you have to reward the team when they go undefeated and win their conference, Kayla. It just, they did everything they could and still got screwed.
You know, sports. Sports really be sportsing. And I'm also not a fan of that. So I'm with you there. My swirly is abstract, and it's going to be Father Time. And and I have many gripes.
Damn
about...
you, Father Time! Damn you!
I do that every night. Is that not what you do before you go to bed? And I do it in that Dumbledore voice you just did, too. No, this is because I just had, I honestly think one of my first, like, not while I'm old, but like my concept of time has to adjust, meaning that I was processing some paperwork at work for health insurance, and someone put like the birth dates of his dependents, and it looked like he put his child's birthday in the spouse line, which happens a lot because they're together, and I realized, no, someone can be born in the year 2000 and be of age to be married. And in my brain, when I saw 2000, I was like, oh, that's clearly a child. And then I looked at this person's age and this person, I go, oh my God, no. And that, I had to sit with that, kind of staring at this paper, but disassociating for so long because I go, oh my fucking God, no. So fuck you, Father Time.
Well, it's it's just like when you hear those things of, well, now, between now and the year 1990 is a greater difference than between 1990 and 1970. But us millennials that grew up through the 90s and the 2000s, 2000 is basically the measuring stick, right? So everything just seems like, 2000 was 10 years ago. No, it's 23 years ago at this point. It's not that close anymore.
But I tell you,
which really sucks.
The realization of that in real time was so, it threw me off the whole rest of the day. I just was like, oh my God. Wild. All right. Friendship question of the week, Justin. Is there a film genre that everyone seems to love and adore, but you personally can't stand?
So, yes, there are. There are a couple, but I'm going to go kind of pretty niche here. Like the slapstick horror comedies, like the Hot Fuzz type of movies, like those things. Everybody seems to love those, and I cannot stand them. I think they are atrocious, Kayla. You just gave me a look. Is that a look as you agree or you disagree?
Hot Fuzz, yeah.
Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, those types of movies, like I have no interest in, but I know people freaking love them.
Yeah. I guess I wasn't expecting Hot Fuzz to be the one that you referenced ever, so that kind of threw me off. I forget, like, what I deem horror, what you deem horror, or horror comedy is, like, might be different.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like a slapstick comedy, but with horror elements to it, where it's like, oh, look at these stupid zombies. Let's do this thing. Like, I just can't stand it.
I feel personally attacked, especially with my love of What We Do in the Shadows.
I haven't seen What We Do in the Shadows, but that is kind of the thing that was running through my mind. The way you guys talk about it, I was like, that doesn't sound very funny to me, but you guys really, really love it.
We love it. It is my personality. Yeah. I definitely have the framed artwork in my house. Interesting. That is not where I thought you'd go, but that makes total sense. Yeah, you don't like horror, and it, I mean the comedy is all centered on the horror too, you know, like that's the joke. So
exactly, and makes I just sense. If you're gonna do horror, go all out horror and scare the shit out of me. Don't do this middle,
even though you don't want thing. That even though if you're all horror,
no,
don't
I,
do that
I
either.
Don't want that either. Kayla, no, that's true.
Okay my genre, I've realized this season, I think this is, you know, Christmas movies. I've kind of come to a realization that
you're saying that in December, Kayla.
I am. I thought it was fitting, and I'm ready to speak my truth here at the end of the pod. If you're still listening, Christmas movies, I don't think I really care for them. They're very truly, maybe on one hand, I can count the ones that I rewatch and enjoy, but they're just incredibly cheesy, predictable. I would never watch a Hallmark movie. I don't understand why people watch 150 versions of the same plot. Never got into them. So I mean, I do, but they're more nostalgia than me rewatching them. So Christmas movies, I stand on it. Sorry, guys.
And I think one of the things that's happened with all the streaming services that come out, and there's just so much content that's been going out the last 5 years or so, it's taken away from the really good quality rom-coms or Christmas movies that had a wide theatrical release, because now those don't get put out by the theaters and by the studios to theaters. Those are on the streaming services, so they have lesser directors, lesser actors. So, yeah, it's kind of fallen off a cliff. I know there's that new Glenn Powell, Sidney Sweeney movie, the rom-com that's coming out that people are talking about. I think Anybody But You or Anything But You, that's supposed to be pretty good. But how many of those have you really seen over the last 5 to 10 years?
You already know you felt some type of way about me landing in our rom-com romance draft, leaning more romance. True. Because, again, I think, you're kind of insinuating, a lot of Christmas movies tend to be rom-coms, and that somehow is a genre that hasn't really kind of hit me. So, checks out.
Well, this was a safe space, Kayla.
It was.
So thank you for sharing your truth.
Thank you. Bah, humbug. anywho, I think that wraps it up for our episode today. We gave you a lot of movies and TV shows. If you haven't watched, please do see where your top fives land. And we'll see you next week.
Well, that's it for this episode of Wrong Opinions Only. Please follow us on Instagram at Wrong Opinions Only and on Twitter at Wrong Opinions JK, where we'll be dropping some clues and hints to upcoming episodes. Until then, JK out.